This is Audible.
I'm Andy McNab and this is Spoken from the Front. IEDs, improvised explosive devices, have always been a major fear for the British Army. Even during my operational tours of Northern Ireland, I was blown up three times by devices that were laid by the Provisional IRA. These were crude bombs, made from fertiliser and diesel fuel oil. But today, IEDs are far more sophisticated, even using mobile phone technology to detonate high explosive. These devices are then concealed on the side of the road, or even under it, hidden in drainage culverts. Unfortunately, the tactic of simply blowing up soldiers works. In Iraq, more British and US troops have been killed by IEDs than there have by gunshot wounds. But fortunately, combat medicine is now so advanced, more soldiers survive these attacks than ever before. I'm Andy McNab, and this is Spoken from the Front. The following story is based on real events. All around me are familiar faces.
We were crunching through the streets of Baghdad in the Warrior, heading for the British Embassy. The Warrior is the infantry's fighting vehicle, basically 25 tons of dead hard steel. Kenny, Dan and I were in the back, sitting in the red glow of our night viewing lights. Above us, through the open mortar hatches, we could see streetlights and the ruins of what had once been city buildings looming down from each side of the road. The two wagons escorting us from the green zone belonged to the infantry rifle company that was protecting the British Embassy not far from our compound. Tui was getting his face sorted out after the Prince Harry job, so tonight it was just the three of us from the regiment. We were hitching a ride to a drinks party. Seriously. That stuff really does go on even in the middle of a war zone. After all, there are certain standards that have to be kept up. Of course, we wouldn't normally get a look in, but we'd been invited as a thank you for getting HRH out of the ship. The inside of the wagon was as dust-covered as the city outside. I was at the front of the passenger section, the commander's scabbed-up boots dangling by my head from the turret above. Kenny and Dan were sitting on the benches with me, facing each other by the rear door, and they were sharing that fucking iPod again. Johnny, the wagon's top cover, was standing up between the three of us. His top half, protected by his Osprey body armour and helmet, was sticking out through the mortar hatch as he covered the rear with his mini-me machine gun. Dan had to shout above the noise of both the tank tracks and his iPod. He found a way of plugging into the wagon's speaker system. He pointed at my shirt.
You could have dressed up for the occasion, soft lad. That shirt's in shit state.
Well, at least I didn't come in a floral one. There's no way you're going to school with the ambassador's wife with that on. Dan looked down at his brightly coloured shirt and grinned.
Oh, she'll love it. Besides, I've got some of those fucking Ferrero Rocher chockies with me.
I can't fail. I pulled back on the tubey grip on my left forearm, checking that my catheter was still in place. We'd all inserted one in a vein before we left the green zone, along with the anticoagulant we put in the catheter to stop the blood from clotting. We'd all be good for the next 24 hours. If you get brassed up on a job, it's hard to get a vein up, particularly if you've lost a lot of blood and you're in the dark and under fire, so everyone sticks one in. We all had to be ready, because for the next 24 hours, we were the standby team. Anything that Special Forces had to deal with was ours. That's why we'd been allowed to go to the reception to have a few sherbets. We'd nothing else to do except hang about waiting for something to happen. Kenny and Dan were arguing about what track to have on next. Kenny grabbed the iPod.
I don't want that one. It's shite. Oh, don't be such a twat. That's the best track on it.
I wish Tui was here with us. At least I'd have someone semi-normal to talk to. I rested my head against the steel frame of the wagon and let them get on with it, thinking about what I was going to do during my R&R in 3 weeks' time. I'd not seen Holly since she'd started to walk, and now she was toddling around getting her fingers into everything. Thinking about her made me think of the future. of my life after the regiment. I was a month into my business law degree. It'd take a few years, but it'd be worth it. My army career was going to end when I was 40, if I liked it or not, so there was a whole new life ahead of me to plan for. A couple of the lads from the squadron had already got their degrees, so why not me?
Feel numb. Can't move. Feel like I'm winded. It should pass. Come on. It should pass. Come on. Open your eyes. I was on my back. Not sure if I could move. I didn't want to, just in case there was a part of me not working. Or even worse, missing. The wagon was now resting on its side. The mortar hatch opened to the ground instead of the sky. I forced myself to move my toes. They were all there. And then my fingers. All moving. I still had limbs. Alive and in one piece. Thank fuck for that. Anybody alive? Speak to me! Being in the middle must have saved me. The rear of the wagon took the hit. I saw movement towards the back, but there was so much smoke it was hard to see who it was. I could just make out the bodies mangled on top of each other. I forced myself off my back and I scrambled towards the rear. Show me movement! Is there anyone alive? No answer. I felt warm liquid run down my back. Blood was pouring down from the turret. I turned to see the two bodies slumped and still. They'd taken the upblast. Johnny's headless body now lay crumpled against the side of the wagon. The rest of his top half held in place by the Osprey. I groped my way over what was left of him to get to the other two. Kenny was lying over Dan. There was blood everywhere, but no obvious holes in his body. Kenny! Kenny, get up! I tried to shake him. I tried to drag him off Dan, but he wasn't moving. The other warrior was outside covering us now, trying to prevent the insurgents moving in to kill any survivors before the crash-out teams arrived. Our attackers would be out there, hiding in the dark. They would have been watching us drive over the IED, ready to detonate it at exactly the right time. It could have been set off by radio control, or by a wire attached to the detonator and then running from the device to their hide. You touch the wires to battery terminals, and off it goes. Or they could have used a mobile phone attached to the detonator, pressing quick dial as we moved over the HE, that's high explosive device. They would have used any ordnance, any crap that they could lay their hands on. Mortar rounds, artillery shells, anything with HE in it. I shifted so that I could get a look at Dan underneath Kenny. The smoke was beginning to clear, and I could see his face screwed up in pain. He was moving. I dragged Kenny off him and pulled him out through the mortar hatch onto the churned-up tarmac. He still wasn't making a sound. And there was no sign of entry or exit wounds on him, just gashes. I felt for a pulse in his neck. Found it. And he was breathing. I could just feel it on my hand. He'd been fucked up, but he was still doing the two things that would keep him alive. Pulling him onto his front so that his tongue wouldn't fall back and choke him, I headed back into the wagon. Dan? Dan? He was much worse. There was blood everywhere. There was a massive leg wound. It looked like someone had cut into him with a butcher's knife and just kept on digging. You gotta help me get you out of here, mate. You gotta give me your hand. Give it to me. You gotta help me. I started to pull as hard as I could to get him out of the wagon and next to Kenny. I needed to be able to see his injury. Inside, it was just too confined. We might get shot out there, but inside the wagon I wouldn't be able to help him. I dragged Dan by his arms and eventually I squeezed him out of the mortar hatch. Listen, you're all right now, mate. But every man and his fucking dog's gonna be here soon, so just get a grip of that pain. Blood covered his face and matted his hair. He nodded. He knew the score. He knew there was fuck all he could do but just let me get on with it. All the guys in the regiment get trained to deal with trauma wounds and other battlefield casualties.
We had to be able to look after one another on jobs where there weren't going to be any backup. It was up to us to keep each other alive. I looked down at Dan's right thigh and the exposed muscle mass. Blood was oozing out onto the mud and the tarmac beneath him. It was only then that I heard the ominous slurping noise coming from the top of his armour. It came in time with his breathing. Shit. This was a lot more worrying than his leg. I ripped the Velcro from the shoulder pieces of his body armour and the two halves came apart to expose his chest wound. His party shirt was soaked in blood. There was an entry wound about the size of a 50p piece in the top of his chest. Something had gone in at an angle just above the top of his armour and penetrated down into his chest cavity. Probably a bit of sheared off metal from the wagon or even some of Johnny's skull turned into a high velocity round as it shattered in the pressure wave of the detonation. It was definitely a sucking wound. Every time Dan inhaled, I could hear his breath get sucked in through the hole in his chest instead of his mouth. Which meant that he wasn't getting any oxygen. It was just going straight into his chest cavity. We would need to get that sorted out very quickly. Otherwise the fucker was history.
Oi, listen to me, fuckhead. You've got a sucking wound. You're gonna have to plug it up, all right? Plug it up.
Being nice and comforting. It doesn't work like that when you're out in the field. I got hold of his hand and jammed his palm onto the wound. He wasn't completely out of it. He understood what he needed to do. He was just going to have to fight to keep conscious and make sure that he did his job.
Not long now, mate. The medevac won't be long.
His chest was now airtight and hopefully normal breathing would resume and his lungs would inflate. I could see the pain in his eyes as he spluttered and coughed. He tried to look down at his leg.
What's it like? What's it like? Shit state, I'll be back. Keep the hole covered.
I scrambled into the back, pulling out the blood-soaked medibag that was behind the commander's seat. There was nothing I could do about the incoming. I just needed to concentrate on Dan and Kenny. Nothing else mattered. I dragged out the field dressings, great big sanitary towels with bandages attached and safety pins to hold them in place. Dan was losing blood fast. I tried to open one of the dressings, but my blood-soaked hands kept slipping on the foil wrapper. I gripped my teeth around it and ripped it open, spitting away the iron taste of Dan's blood before shoving the dressing deep into his wound. The downside of Dan being able to breathe properly was that now he wouldn't shut up.
What's it like? What's it like?
I looked down at him as I pushed the next dressing deep into his leg wound. He screamed, his dust-covered face twisted with the pain.
I told you, mate, it's shit state. Now shut the fuck up.
You never let a casualty see you looking concerned. I screwed two more dressings into the gaping mass of meat that was his leg. He had a lot to scream about. It's no good just piling bandages on top, because the muscle underneath is still going to bleed. Cavity packing, applying direct pressure inside the wound, that's what stops bleeding. I lifted his hand off the chest wound for a minute and rammed one of the foil wrappers over the hole. That would give the wound a better seal. I pushed his hand back down on top of it. Keep the fucking thing there. First you plug the leaks up, then you replace the blood that's been lost. You get that right and the rest can be taken care of by the crash team. Dan's breathing was rapid and shallow, which wasn't good. I felt the pulse on his neck. His heart was working overtime to circulate what little fluid he had left around his body. Most of it had leaked out over Baghdad. I looked round at Kenny. He fucking moved. He'd rolled over onto his back.
Shit!
I grabbed a pack of safety pins and I scrambled over to him. Then I pushed a pin through his lower lip and tongue and I did it up before pulling him back onto his front. That would stop his tongue going back into his throat and fucking things up. He couldn't feel it. He was out. When he did feel it, he would soon react and take the fucking thing out. He still had a pulse. He was still breathing. That was all that mattered for now. Dan was getting worse. I could hear his breathing quicken as I pulled out the plasma expander from the bag. It was a clear plastic container shaped like a washing up liquid bottle. I ripped it out of its wrapper and I bit off the cap. Fuck hygiene. Infections can be sorted out later.
Medivac's coming, mate. Not long.
I pulled out the tube that was going to feed the fluid into him and I let it run down and splash onto Dan's face.
They're nearly here, mate. You keep plugging that hole.
I screwed the tube onto his catheter and started squeezing the bottle to push fluid into his veins to replace the lost blood.
Suddenly, Dan's hand fell from his chest and there was a sound like a rush of air escaping. The foil wrapper flew into the air on top of a geyser of blood. It sprayed in all directions, covering my face. Fuck! His lung must have been pierced by whatever had gone in. Pressure had built up in his chest cavity and was released when Dan's hand fell. The strain on his heart was going to kill him. The gush subsided as the pressure released and I put his hand back onto it. It had to stay covered or he wouldn't be able to breathe at all and the pressure would just have to be managed. Shove your thumb in. I'll release the pressure. You just keep it plugged. Dan took the pain as he pushed his thumb all the way into the wound. Crash out here, mate. Thank fuck for that. The medevac's downblast battered sand and lumps of tarmac into us as it landed on the other side of the crater. There were more tracked vehicles in the distance, their searchlights cutting into the darkness. I could just make out guys running from the aircraft with stretchers. They'd got all the gear and really knew what they were doing. There you go, Danny boy. Now you're really in the shit though, aren't you? Back home with the kids, finding the cat, cutting the grass. Rather you than me, mate. Dan tried to laugh, but it turned into a raspy cough. I pulled his thumb out of the entry wound. The pressure released and blood gushed out again. I replaced his hand with mine now and held the other bottle up in my left hand for the fluid to run down the tube as the medics dropped to their knees beside us. They removed my hand from his chest, and as they did so, air escaped once more. Bradley's US infantry fighting vehicles were swarming into the area. I watched as the medics put an oxygen mask over Dan's face and stuck tubes into him. They sorted out Kenny, while others jumped into the warrior and checked the bed. I sat in the rubble looking down at Dan. He turned his blood-stained face towards me and gave me the middle finger, along with a smile. I gave him the finger back. No way you're going to score now, is there? Where are those chocolates? I might still make the party.
You've been listening to Spoken from the Front with me, Andy McNabb.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.